Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620kpoj.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. In the second hour of our show today, by the way, just a heads up, Wendy Gelberg is going to be back. She was here a few weeks ago. She's a certified career coach. How do you get a job in these tough times? And we'll be taking your calls. This was a very popular hour when we did it before. We're going to revisit it. In our third hour, Tom Philbin is going to be by. A book about serial killers. We will be asking about many, including George W. Bush. And I want to get into some of the interesting information in today's Financial Times about what's going on in the Middle East. But first, economics, which is usually first and foremost front and center on this program. I just received a copy from the Democrats of the package that is in all probability going to be voted on in the House today, at least the first draft of it, and a list of these things. Dean Baker has been writing about this at some length. There's a couple of very interesting articles about what's going on in the economic world in today's Financial Times. I just finished reading Dean Baker's new book, Plunder and Blunder, The Rise and Fall of the Bubble Economy, with a foreword by Thomas Frank. Read it on Sunday. And so I'm very pleased to welcome to the show Dean Baker. Hey, Dean, welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
And I should say you are the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. The website's cepr.net. So first of all, last night I was on the Keith Olbermann show about this the whole corporate jet Citibank thing, and you know, I guess the main point that I made was that the guys who live in this world of corporate jets, they really live in a world apart from the rest of America. There's this very small, very, very wealthy elite. Who they don't send their kids to the same schools, they don't travel in the same airspace, airplanes, they don't, they drive ride around in limos, they live in gated communities. It's the two Americas, really, that John Edwards was talking about, only on steroids. And, you know, Keith's question was, you know, were these guys surprised at the blowback? And my answer was, yeah, I think they were, because they just don't get it. I'm wondering your thoughts on that, and to what extent this generation, you know, Franklin Roosevelt, whose birthday is this Friday, Franklin Roosevelt talked about the economic royalists of the New Order and called them out on it. And Americans during the Great Depression got it, and they became aware of it, just as they did during the 1880s with the era of the robber barons. And I think that most of the people who remember those times are dead or, you know, not being heard from now. And a new generation is, for the very first time in many cases, learning that we have this Uber class.
Well, I think that's largely true. What's kind of interesting is how this breaks down on party lines. And the way I'd say it breaks down on party lines is it doesn't. I mean, because a lot of the Democrats are as much a part of this class as the Republicans.
Yep.
I first saw that story. I think it was the New York Post. It wasn't the New York Times that broke it.
Yes.
And I think there's a lot of people who consider themselves good liberal Democrats who probably wouldn't have the reaction you and I would have, like, where the hell do these guys get off taking our money and getting themselves a new jet?
Yeah.
There's still this one of the issues that came up in the context of the salaries that the banks are paying to people that's justified by saying, well, they have to pay these salaries even though they're in trouble because they otherwise wouldn't be able to keep good people.
Right, which is nonsense.
Well, what I like to say is the problem is you guys don't have good people.
Well, there's that too, yes.
If you had good people, you wouldn't be coming to the government asking for handouts.
Right. Excellent. Excellent point. Let's talk about some of the macro issues. I read your book, Plunder and Blunder, The Rise and Fall of the Bubble Economies, over the weekend, and recommend it to everybody. It's a great book. A great summary, basically, of the dot-com bubble and the housing bubble and how bubble economies come about. There was one issue that I didn't see addressed in the book that I wanted to bounce off you. This is something that Larry Beinhart first turned me on to, and I've just been reading voraciously over the last couple of months on it, the more I can find on it. And that is that if you go back to 1913, the first institution of the modern income tax in the United States, or for that matter, if you go back to the Civil War, from the founding of this country through today, there have been periods of bubble economies and booms and busts. And sometimes those boom and bust cycles were as short as 6, 8, 10, 12 years. Particularly during the 19th century, whenever the tax on people earning over roughly $3 million a year in today's dollars, which is what it was, you know, throughout most of the 40s, 50s, and early 60s, is more than 50%, you don't have the emergence of bubble economies. It just doesn't happen. And whenever the tax is dropped, as happened under Harding in 1920, 21, and then, you know, Coolidge and Hoover, a bubble economy formed, and then Reagan came along and dropped the tax below 50%, and a series of, I would argue, three bubble economies have formed, the dot-com, the housing, and the commodities bubbles, and probably more to come. And it seems to me like that's really the great regulator, is that top marginal tax rate, because what it does is, you know, having been in business myself and you know, back in the day, having made enough money that I was in a fairly high tax bracket for a few years anyway, and the owner of a business that employed about 25 people, I chose not to take the money out, but rather to build the business, to put the money back into the business, because I was going to have to pay 40, 50, 60% income tax on that. This is in the 70s, on that money. And it just seems to me like that's the most rational way to prevent bubble economies, is to tax the high income. Your thoughts?
Well, a couple of things. In terms of investment, as important as small businesses are, most of this is done by larger businesses or corporate businesses, and the individual tax rate wouldn't be the factor there. It would be the corporate tax rate, and that hasn't changed all that much one way or the other. It's down a little bit today from what it was, but actually, if you had a higher tax rate, your taxed on profit, that really wouldn't, the higher tax rate actually would incur, would I'd have to think about that for a second.
Yeah, because let me just toss you some contrary information. While the conservatives are out running around saying we have a 35% tax rate, the second highest in the industrialized world, the fact of the matter is, of the 38, I think it is, of the largest industrialized economies, we actually are the second lowest in the amount of corporate taxes paid by our corporations, even during our most profitable times. As Warren Buffett wrote in the Berkshire Hathaway annual report year before last, quote, "Corporate taxes are at the lowest level since 1934, 7.4% of all federal receipts, down from 32% of all federal receipts in 1952. And the reason why is because of all the loopholes."
Yeah, there are a lot of loopholes, but actually it changes a huge amount year to year, and actually corporate tax yields were up the last couple of years. So it really matters hugely which year you look at. But no, I don't have a problem with the corporate tax rate where it is. I'm not arguing for a lower corporate tax rate, believe me.
But I'm thinking of the top marginal rate. Some of these fabulously wealthy people looking for places to park, you know, the guys who run the LBO firms and whatnot.
Yeah, see, I actually place much less emphasis on the tax rates than what they got before tax. So the bigger cause of inequality over the last three decades was the greater inequality in before tax income. I mean, again, I'm not arguing for lowering taxes on rich people, but the reason why they got so much richer than the rest of us over the last three decades was first and foremost was because they were getting more before tax, not before.
Possible, though, that they got more before taxes? Because they could take it out without it being taxed.
You could find it in all sorts of different sectors where that wouldn't necessarily be relevant. So the paychecks, high-end earners, medical specialists, lawyers, the folks on Wall Street, the CEOs, those paychecks exploded in this period, and we know that. We have data on that. So that's not a question of were they taking it out or not.
But they did in the 20s, too, when the tax rates dropped.
There was a growing inequality, yeah, but I just don't see necessarily the link to the tax rate. That's what I'm saying. I mean, okay. I think it was more a case that you had growing inequality of before tax income, and obviously they're happy to pay less taxes on it as well.
Today we're talking with Dean Baker, his new book, Plunder and Blunder, The Rise and Fall of the Bubble Economy. And of course, he's with the Center for Economic and Policy Research, CEPR.net. And wanted to make this a bit of a more in-depth interview than our typical, just, you know, 5 minutes in. So you can stick around over the break, right, Dean?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. This is from today's Financial Times. Almost 20 years of right-wing rule in Iceland came to an ignominious end yesterday. And obviously the result of right-wing economic policies. Your thoughts on that and what it may mean for the United States?
Well, Iceland had a horrible bubble economy, and it was this again. It's kind of mind-boggling that more people didn't see this coming. It's mind-boggling they didn't see it coming in the U.S. But there was just their current account deficit, which is basically a trade deficit, was 15% of GDP. Give you an analogy in the United States, that would be about a current account or trade deficit on the order of about $2.2 trillion. On an annual basis. We were complaining about our trade deficit. It was around 6% of GDP at its peak in 2006. So we're talking about something that's 2.5 times as large.
Right.
Now, the fact that that wasn't sustainable, that was going to end badly, that seemed evident to me. I don't know why every economist in the world wasn't pointing to Iceland and go, this place is a basket case. It's going to blow up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they've been reading too much of Milton and Tom Friedman, I think.
Yeah, no, they were not paying attention. They were not thinking.
There you go. Dean Baker's with us. We'll pick up this conversation on the other side of the break. A couple more questions. Many of them sparked by today's Financial Times. Fascinating stuff right after this break. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Saving the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon. AM 620 KPOJ. Portland's only progressive talk station.
I'm Todd Davis, CEO of LifeLock, and what I'm about to tell you is true. My real Social Security number is 457-55-5462. You may think I'm crazy, but I know my identity is safe. At LifeLock, every member is covered by our $1 million total service guarantee.
Every 3 seconds, someone's identity is stolen. It's not just the money that's being stolen. It's your reputation, your credits, and your valuable time to fix the huge mess. At LifeLock, we aim to prevent identity theft before it happens, and if anything happens while you're a client of LifeLock, you'll be protected by our exclusive $1 million total service guarantee. With LifeLock, you'll also see a huge reduction in junk mail and pre-approved credit offers. Call 1-800-643-1385 right now and get 30 days of LifeLock for free. Protect yourself and your family from identity theft. And when you call right now, get 30 days free. Call now, 1-800-643-1385. That's 1-800-643-1385. Again, 1-800-643-1385.
He's one of the smartest guys on the radio.
The conventional wisdom is that if you lower taxes, working people will have more money. The reality is that when you lower taxes, the only group who has more money is the rich.
Tom Hartman, Nationwide.
And I'm telling you, most Democrats don't realize this. They haven't bothered to look at history or study economics. And the vast majority of working people don't know it.
Tom Hartman, 9 to noon.
Because the majority of people in the media are millionaires.
On AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
What's worse than losing half of your investments? It's recovering and letting it happen all over again. I'm Bill Meyer, president of Strategic Group, a Portland investment advisor firm. If you're looking for an investment advisor that has a different strategy geared for investing in this volatile market and have 500,000 investable assets, call now for a free consultation. 503-222-9737.
Real people, real results. Strategic Group.
Nothing like floating in the pool.
Hi there. I'm your local Geico agent.
What are you doing in my swimming pool?
The backstroke.
What?
No. Actually, I'm here to help you save money on your car insurance. I'm in the neighborhood, so if you ever need help, I'm here for you.
In my pool?
Hey, it's good to have me close by. That way you get the same low price Geico is known for, but with the personal service of a local agent.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, well, you think that's amazing. Watch me do a reverse 3.5 somersault in the pike position.
Nice tuck.
If you ever need help saving money on car insurance, have questions about your policy, or just want a free rate quote, your local Geico agent is always close by.
Your local Geico office can help you insure more than just your car. They can help you with motorcycle, boat, homeowners, renters, and other insurance products. For a free rate quote, call 503-794-0901. That's 503-794-0901. Or visit your local Geico office at 13031 Southeast 84th Avenue in Clackamas.
See this car? This baby seats five comfortably.
This car won't even seat five legally.
In a world where getting what you need isn't as easy as it should be, it's nice to know Radio Shack has a great selection of phones and plans and the expertise to help you find the perfect one.
You just gotta put three in the front.
Get the Samsung Instinct from Sprint for just $49.99 with qualifying new two-year agreement on an everything plan with data at Radio Shack.
Good through 2/14/09 excludes taxes. Subject to $36 activation up to $200 early termination fees, credit approval, and deposit. Restrictions apply. See store for details.
TurboTax presents a message from Benjamin Franklin.
Ben here, you know, from the $100 bill, and I want you to get more of me back on your taxes. Just use TurboTax. It has a feature called It's Deductible, which gives you the full resale value on your charitable donations for a bigger deduction. So it's easy to get the maximum refund you're entitled to. And by maximum refund, I mean me, with a posse.
TurboTax. Choose easy. Get the federal free edition at TurboTax.com. It's deductible included in deluxe, premier, and home and business.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
What happens? Does anybody know? What happens? Where did America go? Everything Walmart all the time. No more mom and pop, five and dime. What happens? Where did America go?
Welcome back to the place where progressives come to party. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Plunder and Blunder is the title of Dean Baker's new book, The Rise and Fall of the Bubble Economy. He's the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, CEPR.net, as in Center for Economic and Policy Research, surprisingly enough. And Dean, first of all, your thoughts on this whole economic stimulus package that the Democrats are putting forward.
Well, it's a good start. I mean, we have to do something quickly to boost the economy. It's in just a free fall. This is far and away the worst economy I've seen in my lifetime. We're losing jobs. The official data shows at the rate of 500,000 a month over the last quarter because of the way in which jobs and new firms are counted. I think it might have actually been more like 600,000 or maybe even 700,000 a month. But however fast we're losing jobs in the last quarter, I think it's even accelerated. We've seen this wave of announcements of job cuts from firms that are across the economic spectrum. They're high-tech, retail, manufacturing, pharmaceuticals. Just everyone is cutting jobs across the board. And state and local governments are about to give us a wave of job cuts if we don't get the money very, very quickly, because they all have to balance their budgets, and they're all looking at big shortfalls. So we really need this as soon as possible. It would have been great if we had it. Well, we had something when President Bush was still in office, but it would have been great if we could have had something for President Obama to sign his first day in office. Hopefully they'll get this ready for him to their target February 13th. Anyhow, that's the start, though, but it's not going far enough, because even by the estimates of the Obama administration, this is going to knock down the unemployment rate by 2 percentage points, which is great. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at. But we're looking at a baseline where we're going to have unemployment of over 9% in 2 years. And if you knock that down by 2 percentage points, you're still looking at unemployment of 7%. Mm-hmm. And that's not very good. So I think we actually have to see a lot more than this. And one of the issues that people raise, how can you get money into the economy quickly? And one of the things I've been tossing out there, I originally did a little flippantly, but I began to think of more of it. No one's told me why it's a bad idea. Why don't we get people work fewer hours? Why don't we give tax breaks to firms that, let's say, cut their work weeks by 10%, reduce the work week from 40 to 36 hours? We'll make up the difference so people still have the same amount of money in their pocket. In principle, they're going to have the same demand. Everyone's got just as much money as they did before. So workers are putting in 10% fewer hours. They're probably going to have to hire somewhere around 10% more workers.
Yeah, you wrote a great op-ed piece about this last week. This is, in essence, what France did about a decade ago, is it not?
Yeah, in a somewhat different context, but that's exactly right. France, I forget the year they implemented. I should look this up. It was around 99 or 2000. They went from a 46-hour to a 35-hour work week. And it was very popular there. The new president, of course, Sarkozy, is a conservative, had said he was going to turn it back. And there was mass opposition from across the political spectrum. People like it.
Right. And it's not only good for families. It actually is good for the economy. It's a way of basically increasing demand for labor, slightly decreasing the labor force, going back to David Ricardo's, 1816 on labor, and without, deporting people.
So it's a chance. I mean, it's really kind of perverse. If you think about the problem we're facing right now, it's not one of scarcity. We usually talk about, oh my God, we don't have it. We aren't producing enough cars, housing, medical, whatever you want to say. That's the opposite problem we face now. We're producing too much. And it's crazy that we should have people suffering because we're producing too much.
Right. Wages have not tracked productivity for 30 years like they did for the previous 200.
Exactly.
And that seems to be the big disparity. And by the way, let me let our listeners know, Dean's going to stick around for one more segment. And if you have a call if you have a question for somebody with an actual PhD in economics, Dean Baker is on the line with us. Plunder and Blunder, his new book. Dean, in today's Financial Times, Martin Wolf writing about debt and particularly private debt as a percentage of GDP. He talks about in the United States, you were talking about, for example, our balance of trade or the trade deficit being 6% of GDP. He notes that household debt in the United States was 66% of U.S. GDP in 1997, over 100% of GDP in 2007. We have a big problem in this country.
Yeah, and this was, part of the sort of the flip side of the housing bubble, because people saw house prices rising and rising and rising, and they felt they didn't have to save. They borrowed against the equity in their home. And as house prices were rising, one of the striking statistics about this, the percentage of the people's homes that they own, what percent of the home do you own? It used
equity.
To be in the high 60s. That fell to below 50%. The most recent data was it was around 40%. People had borrowed close to two-thirds of the value of their home. And this was at a time when equity, obviously when the price rises, that's dollar for dollar translate into equity, but people were taking it out more rapidly than the bubble was creating it. And of course, now the bubble's burst.
And I would argue the reason that was happening was because wages were not tracking productivity, and so people didn't have more buying power even as the economy was increasing, and so they made up the loss in wages, going back to Reagan's war on labor, they made up the loss of wages by increasing debt.
Well, that is, I think, part of the story with many people. I think in many people's case, it was simply that if you have more money in your home, why not take advantage of it? If your house price is going up 20% a year, why bother to save?
You had President Bush out there saying, go shopping.
Yeah.
If you want to be patriotic, go shopping. And it's a very bizarre culture that we have created. Dean Baker with us. We'll be taking your calls for Dean Baker right after the break. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 27 minutes past the hour. We're going to stimulate the economy now. Stick around for our economic stimulus moment, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
That's a pity to see when the land of the free turned out to be nothing but a free-for-all. If you got big dough, you're freer than most, cause your freedom goes up with the size of your bankroll. You can buy a judge or a bribe or a thug or a bomb or a shredding machine. You can buy your way through Intune on to any ticket or TV screen. It's a money disease. It's a thing called greed. And it feeds the nose and eats the money most in money land. Oh, ain't you funny if you ain't got the money in money land.
It's Viagra for your brain, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Welcome back. By the way, just a quick heads up, February 26th and 27th, I'll be doing my show from the Radio Row at the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC 2009 in Washington, D.C. March 7th, that's Saturday in Seattle, we're doing a one-day cruise with me and some folks from KPTK AM 1090, noon to 3. You can get information at am1090seattle.com, their website. On March 19th in Chicago, Illinois, I will be debating Michael Medved. That is sponsored by WCPT, Progressive Talk AM and FM in Chicago. It's on their website. And in Denver, Colorado, on May 1st and 2nd, Friday and Saturday, actually it's probably just going to be the 2nd, Saturday, I will be keynoting the Green Festival in Denver, Colorado. So just a heads up on things coming up. And we're talking with Dean Baker, Plunder and Blunder, the Rise and Fall of the Bubble Economy, his website. And, Dean, any other points you want to make real quickly before we pick up some phone calls?
Let's just go to the calls.
All righty. Chris in Corvallis, Oregon. Hey, Chris, you're on the air with Dean Baker.
Yes, hello. I'm wondering how we balance the stimulating effects of, you know, injecting money into the economy to create jobs and buoy businesses and reduce debt in the short term with what we've been doing all along, which is borrowing money. And somehow there's an idea that borrowing at the federal level is a neutral activity, but I think that also weakens our future possibilities in a variety of ways. And how do we balance those two things? And don't we have to take a hit eventually anyway?
Well, it's very hard to see how taking a hit makes us any better off. I mean, people are taking a hit. People are losing. They've lost on the order of $6 trillion in housing wealth. People had money in 401ks, and the stock market took a $7 trillion hit. So they've taken a hit. And somehow the idea that suppose we say we're going to balance the budget, well, we'll have a lot of unemployment. I don't know how that helps us. I don't know how it helps our children, how it helps our grandchildren. Maybe it'll make someone feel good. It doesn't make me feel good. It doesn't make most of the people I know feel good to be unemployed and without health care. So I don't really see an option here but to spend lots of money. And, yeah, we're going to borrow it. We're going to print some of it. And that might sound silly to people, but the United States government could do that. We don't have a problem. If you know people that won't take money, won't honor U.S. Debt, U.S. Dollars, give me their phone number. I'll take the money off their hands.
Yeah, but with M3 going up, are we looking at the possibility of inflation?
Well, it's very hard to see at this point. You get inflation when you get too much money chasing too few goods and services. We have the opposite problem now. We don't have enough money chasing goods and services.
Right. Okay. Interesting. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Allie in Evanston, Illinois. Allie, you're on the air with Dean Baker.
Hi, Dean, Tom. Thanks a lot for answering my call. Here's my question. Now, I know there's a lot of a lot more shovel-ready projects, and I know they need to do more infrastructure for the bill. But now here's my question. I've been a paralegal for many years. How is this going to somehow translate or domino effect to a job for someone like me?
Well, the idea is that whatever money was spent directly, a lot of that money is going to be respent. So we have people who are working on these roads, on different infrastructure projects, working retrofitting buildings to make them more energy efficient, the various projects that are listed in the stimulus package. That's their paycheck, paychecks they wouldn't have otherwise. They're going to spend that, and they'll spend on a wide range of services. Now, I don't know how many of them are going to need legal help, but I'm sure some of them will. They're obviously we all need legal help at different points in time, and you have to be able to pay for it. So this will reverberate through the economy. So I think it's a very good package. It's not big enough. There's other quibbles I have with it. I'd like to see more money for public transit. I don't know why we don't make public transit virtually free. Something get money in the economy very quickly, and it'd be good for the environment.
Yeah.
But in any case, I think on the whole it's a good program.
I would say the same thing for college education. Let's invest in our intellectual and human infrastructure as well. Dave in Buffalo, New York, you're on with Dean Baker.
Thanks, Tom. Dean, I have a question. If the bailout for the health insurance industry is a nationalized system that would make it easier for all of us, if we were to nationalize the banks and to take like the $350 billion and use that for capital or beginning capital to loan out to people, and we use it as a bank, as a kind of like a downward pressure on the rest of the banks, we don't have to nationalize any bank in particular, just start up our own and or a government run one, and we can, you know, make deposits and withdrawals, and then they could have that money instantaneously ready to be lent out as needed, and we don't need to go through bartering, you know, don't give to your CEOs or all the other shenanigans that seem to go on. Providing for ourselves really seems to be the answer.
Well, the banks to some extent are holding us hostage. If we just let them go under, I'd love to kick the CEOs out. They ripped us off. I'd love to have attorney generals go over them with a fine-tooth comb and lock up the ones you could lock up. But the bank's deposits, their liabilities are owed to pension funds, to our retirement funds. We can't just let them go under.
But what you just described, Dean, is what Bill Seidman did with SNLs in the 80s, and it's what Gordon Brown just did with Northern Rock in the U.K.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. We want to take them over. We want to keep them operating, honor most of their obligations, not necessarily all of them, not necessarily 100%.
But the boards are replaced and the CEOs are fired.
Exactly. We owe those people nothing. They messed up. So they're all big fans of the free market, and when you fail in the free market, you're out of luck. So that's what we should be doing. But we do have a stake in keeping these things in operation.
Yeah, absolutely. Jack in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. You're on with Dean Baker.
Hey, I noticed you used the word blunder in your title, and I've seen that this Ponzi economy and Ponzi democracy be explained away by blunder theories and competence theories. And I'd like to know from you, how can you prove a blunder theory as opposed to a conspiracy theory such as, pigeons?
Well,
that's an inside. The pigeons is an inside joke, Dean.
But, okay, I don't know about
the pigeons. The idea that this really was a setup, that these guys said, okay, we're going to take everything we can, we're going to take it as fast as we can, we're going to make off with the money because the opportunity is there. What the hell, And as opposed to, gee, we just kind of blundered into this.
I think there's a lot to that. I wouldn't see it as a conspiracy as opposed to just what are their incentives. You're an executive at Citibank or Merrill Lynch or any of these big investment banks, and you're making a lot of money. And suppose they agreed with everything I said. It's 2004. They agreed with everything they said. They read one of my papers and go, oh, yeah, we have a real bad housing bubble. It's going to crash. Well, it's totally reasonable for them to go, well, I'm just going to stuff my pockets full, and, yeah, it's going to go under. Merrill's going to go under. Citi's going to go under. But in the meantime, I've made $100 million. What do I care?
Yeah. And this, in addition to my thinking that we should raise top marginal rates, I'm also of the opinion that we should stop compensating CEOs with stock, because then they start behaving like market investors and start thinking in terms of quarters and profits and dividends, and go back to compensating them with a paycheck so that they start thinking about what's best for the corporation. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'd like to see us rebalance rules of corporate governance to give shareholders more of a say, because as it stands now, basically the CEOs are signing their own paychecks. They pick the boards of directors, they pick the compensation committees, and they're all their friends. So, I'd like to think my friends would give me a good paycheck too, but, I'm not in that situation. But it's not in the shareholders' interest to have these CEOs running around with these huge paychecks in many cases, certainly with the banks, leaving them stuck with the bag.
Well, beyond that, what I'm arguing is that the shareholders' interest, shareholders who are investors, they're looking for a return on investment. That interest is different from the interest of labor, and both of those interests are different from the interest of the corporation as an entity in the abstract, which is, growth and survival. And so the shareholders, actually, there's a dynamic tension there. The shareholders just want to extract as much as they can out of the entity. The entity wants to grow and survive. Before, in the 80s, we changed compensation rules and started compensating CEOs with stock, they were not behaving like shareholders. In the 1950s, the typical CEO of a Fortune 500 company had been with that company over 35 years. Now it's less than 10. And it's because they're actually behaving like shareholders, and that's a bad thing, I'm postulating.
Yeah, well, I think, as I say, I think of the shareholders aren't really getting their interests well represented. They just got taken to the cleaners. You have a lot of shareholders that just lost half their money. So they're not very happy. So
sure,
they're not being well served by this current structure. Now, the CEOs, the executives that were running the banks over the last 4 or 5 years, some of them have lost their jobs, but they've still walked away being very wealthy.
Right.
So I think if we simply it's not my ideal world to have the shareholders have complete control over the corporation, but I think it's a simple thing to say that there's more of a claim the shareholders should be running the company than the CEOs run it for their own ends.
Right. Okay. Interesting perspective. We've been talking with Dean Baker. We're gonna take a break here. And Dean, thanks so much for dropping by. I really appreciate the conversation with you.
Thanks a lot for having me on.
Great work that you're doing. Your new book, Plunder and Blunder: The Rise and Fall of the Bubble Economy, a fascinating and quick read. It's a great book. I highly recommend it. And the website, of course, for the Center for Economic and Policy Research, CEPR.net. Thanks again, Dean. Thanks. Good talking with you. 45 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman Program, 866-303-2270. We'll be right back.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Truth is his weapon. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
The hardest part of any home improvement project is finding a good quality contractor, somebody who's going to do the job right, complete it on time and within budget, and not going to hassle you. So who do you call? Who do you trust when you need a plumber, a painter, an electrician? I'll tell you who to call. Like me, call Angie's List. Before we signed up for Angie's List, we had a disaster contractor install a kitchen counter. We used Angie's List to find a handyman to show up and fix everything. They really came through for us. More than 650,000 homeowners nationwide use Angie's List for ratings and reviews on more than 300 service categories, even doctors. It's a word-of-mouth network for consumers. Angie's List is a growing collection of homeowners' real-life experiences with local service companies. Now the people who join Angie's List, they're like you. They're looking for a way to find trustworthy companies that perform high-quality work. To join Angie's List, go to AngiesList.com and eliminate the fear of hiring the wrong company. I joined Angie's List, and you should, too, today at AngiesList.com. 1-888-888-LIST. 888-888-LIST.
Taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
This is a change in the definition of what America is.
Rachel Maddow.
We've long had a very, 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 very diverse country. We just have been very resistant to the idea that our government ought to look as diverse as our country.
That has now changed.
But it is also a big day for the Democratic Party, and it is a very big day for the Republican Party.
Rachel Maddow.
Which now has no obvious leader, no clear direction.
Evening, 6 to 8.
No clear guiding ideology, either economically or in terms of foreign policy.
On AM 620, KPOJ.
Dear Mom and Dad, well, the Army has finally seen fit to give me some time off, so I'm writing to tell you that I'm doing fine over here. And Mom, since you asked, if anyone wants to help, just tell them to contact the USO. You can't believe how much they do for us. With love, your son Michael.
The USO depends on the generosity of the American people. To find out how you can help, visit us at USO.org. The USO. Until everyone comes home.
Hey, thought you were making breakfast.
I am, with McDonald's Breakfast Dollar Menu.
How is that making breakfast?
I'm mixing and matching, you know, putting breakfast together.
We're on a budget.
They're a dollar each. You know, I can't bake warm biscuits or sizzle sausage for that.
True.
I can't put real fruit in yogurt or make crispy hash browns for a buck.
You're so right.
Make your own morning and choose from six wallet-friendly favorites on McDonald's Breakfast Dollar Menu.
This was a brilliant idea.
Yeah, well, I do have my moments.
Breakfast served during breakfast hours only.
Wait a minute. No, she didn't just jump me in line. It is way too early. excuse me. excuse me. But I know you saw me standing here. Girl, you are lucky I had a sweet McGriddles and orange juice this morning. Because if I hadn't, whoo, it'd be on.
Start your mornings off on the right track with breakfast from McDonald's. A Southern-style chicken biscuit or McGriddle sandwich is enough to put anyone in a good mood and set a positive tone for your day.
Al museo está al lado del parque. Al museo está al lado del parque. Al museo está al lado del parque. Al museo está al lado.
When you realize you're actually speaking in another language, you won't be able to stop. Experience the joy for yourself with a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. Call 1-800-509-9122. Developed around the way you naturally think and learn, Rosetta Stone guarantees that this proven program is the fastest, easiest way to learn a new language, the same way you learned your first language. And now you can get a free demo as our gift to you. With no translation, no boring drills, and no useless memorization, there's no way you won't enjoy learning a new language.
El museo está al lado del parque.
Try Rosetta Stone for free by calling 1-800-509-9122. 1-800-509-9122. For your free demo, call 1-800-509-9122.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
When I was just a youngster, a good time loving funster, this is what my daddy said to me.
What'd he say?
He said, now get up off your rear, pay a attention and you'll hear how to be a success from B to G. And he said, plumbing, that's what's coming.
Plumbing?
Everybody's pipes, Lord, they've got to be a runner. If you look, I think you'll see the way things always be. You ought to be a plumber.
Yeah, you ought to be a plumber. In fact, maybe tomorrow Joe the Plumber will drop by and we'll have a little conversation with him about plumbing. In fact, if you have questions about plumbing, you could drop me a note, you know, for Joe the Plumber. We can pass them along to him. Or post them on our, actually post them on our blog over at TomHartmann.com. What's your most pressing plumbing question? I think it might be an interesting conversation. Very interesting conversation. By the way, our Twilight Zone alert for the day. Police in Nigeria are holding a goat on suspicion of attempted armed robbery. Vigilantes took the black and white beast to the police, saying it was an armed robber who used black magic to transform himself into a goat. They came in and they bunch of hoodlums were trying to rob a car. The police pursued them. However, one escaped while the other turned into a goat. Kwara State Police spokesman Tunde Mohammed told Reuters by telephone. We cannot confirm the story, he said, but the goat is in our custody. Yeah, well, a fine thing. By the way, quick update on some of the things going on. The Senate Judiciary Committee with two no votes, Tom Coburn, Mr. No, the Republican of Oklahoma, and John Cornyn, Mr. I don't know. How do you describe somebody who thinks that his... well, whatever. John Cornyn, the Republican from Texas, the only nay votes. Arlen Specter actually voted for it, for Holder's nomination, although he expressed reservations. And he's the guy who had forced the Senate Democrats to delay the hearings. Perhaps your calls to Arlen Specter's office helped get this thing out. In the meantime, of course, Karl Rove is begging not to be called before Congress, not to have Mr. Holder enforce the subpoena. Let's get this guy confirmed right away. And the House Democrats are stripping funding for the National Mall as well as family planning from the financial stimulus bill. You know, hopefully these things will be in separate bills. We'll get these things out. But, you know, generally speaking, a lot going on. Russia has halted, by the way, their missile plans. This is a good thing. So, you know, again, the damage that the Bush administration has done is being undone. And I think that's just marvelous. It's just absolutely marvelous and a fine thing it is. Phil sends a note. He says he called into the show earlier. And I had asked Shelley, who's doing our call screening, to only take calls, you know, with questions for Dean. And so Phil didn't get through. My apologies, Phil. Phil said, during World War II, there was an English radio announcer who broadcast in English to English American soldiers to discourage their efforts. His name was Lord Haw-Haw. He says we should rename Limbaugh as Lord Limbaugh, as he's doing to the American people what Lord was doing to the troops. It's an interesting theory. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Gary in Surprise, Arizona. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Oh, hi. I was listening. I wanted to get on with your economist.
Yeah, but he's not here, so you can talk
to
him.
But he's not there, but I have many questions. One thing is I have a degree in economics, and I've listened to you for a couple of years. But one thing that nobody ever explains is, you know, what is the basic purpose of a bank economically? You know, in my mind, a bank, I deposit my money, they pay me so much interest on my deposit, and then you come and you borrow the money from the bank, and you pay a higher interest to borrow that money.
Right. There's actually two different answers to that question, Gary. The first is that from a societal point of view, the reason why we allow banks to even be chartered, the reason why we have laws that give banks special privileges that other corporations don't have, is because there's a societal good in having a common medium of exchange and facilitating commerce.
Right.
That's the societal view. But if you ask a stockholder in a bank, they would say that the reason for a bank is to be a business that makes money. And those two interests are very often in collision with each other, which is why we need to strongly regulate banks.
Yes.
Okay.
And then the next question is, and nobody nobody ever really answers this question, is what is the purpose of the stock market? Because to me, the purpose of the stock market is to raise money for corporations. I buy money, a stock in a corporation, to give them the money, and they guarantee me more money than I can get in the bank.
Right. Now, that's true of an initial stock offering. And this is, again, you're highlighting one of the things that most people don't know, and that is that when you buy stock in a company, unless it's the initial offering that the company itself is selling, that money doesn't go to the company. If you go down to your local stockbroker and say, I want to buy 1,000 shares of General Electric, General Electric doesn't see a penny of it. You're buying that stock from somebody else. So stock markets, their function of being a clearinghouse for IPOs, for initial public offerings, for rolling stock out into the market, is yes, it's a great and very efficient vehicle for companies to raise money to engage in business practices. On the other hand, and that should be their primary focus, and that was the idea of, you know, when Alexander Hamilton suggested that we should have an American stock exchange here in the United States, that was why. But what has happened over the years is that they've become basically gambling houses.
So my thought economically, is it that the rest of everything, the derivatives and all this other stuff that they've piled on us, are nothing. It's nothing but a big Ponzi scheme.
It is. It very much is. When you've you've got $1,000 trillion worth of derivatives, according to the Bank of International Settlements worldwide. $1,000 trillion. The world GDP is only $56 trillion. U.S. GDP is only around $15-16 trillion. So, you know, obviously there's a Ponzi scheme going on here, because there's a whole bunch of paper representing a whole bunch of money that can't possibly exist. And you're absolutely right. And the fact that these things can be bought and sold in marketplaces means that, in my opinion, I think, Gary, you're agreeing with me, is that those marketplaces are illegitimate.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, yeah.
And to be honest with you, that's what needs to be cleaned up.
Yep.
And even the Democrats, I don't think, understand that.
You're right. And this is thank you, Gary. There is such widespread ignorance of basic macroeconomics, kind of macro econ 101. It's really tragic. I mean, I try to do the best I can on the show, and you know, there's some excellent books out there, but we really need to be teaching this stuff in our schools.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club. Providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620kpoj.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. How do you find a good job? We had Wendy Gelberg on the show a while back, and got a great response. A lot of people had many, many questions. We wrapped that segment up unfortunately, a lot of people still on hold with questions about how can I get a job? What are the most effective ways to get a job? I wanted to get Wendy back on here. GentleJobSearch.com is her website. She's a certified career coach. She's the author of the new book, The Successful Introvert, How to Enhance Your Job Search and Advance Your Career. And Wendy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be back.
Let's very quickly, first of all, revisit that question that is posed by the title of your book that we discussed last time you were on, because I think it's an important one. The skill set associated with getting a job, which is generally the extrovert skill set,
right,
is very different from the skill set that is required for many jobs, which may be introvert, extrovert, or neutral in that regard. How does somebody who is an introvert, who isn't, you know, who doesn't, you know, the idea of going out and knocking on doors, and I have one study here that shows that 47%, that knocking on doors is the most effective way to get a job, 47% success rate if you actually physically show up even when they ask you not to.
Right.
But that's something that for a lot of people, they just couldn't bring themselves to do or find very, very difficult to do. How best to deal with that paradox?
There are some things that introverts can do that allow them to use the skills that they're best at. You don't necessarily have to physically show up in person if that's something that's going to be really extraordinarily uncomfortable for you. There are other ways to reach out to companies, and making sure you do some of those things. Networking in some way, shape, or form is going to be the key for most people to getting their next job. But there are just so many different ways to do that that introverts can tap into the ways that work best for them. They can rely on things like some of the social networking sites such as LinkedIn and MySpace and Facebook and all of that, make their connections that way, communicate with people online by email when they have a chance to really think about what they want to say rather than having to just react in the moment. There are lots of things like that that I think work well and build on the strengths that introverts have.
Great. And let me toss this out to our listeners, too. If you have a question about finding a job in today's economy, in this world, and how to go about it, how most effectively to present yourself from resume building to interviewing to anything else, Wendy Gelberg is with us here. She knows what she's talking about. And we will be taking your calls at 866-303-2270. Wendy, with the jobless rate climbing, 76,000 people were laid off just on Monday. How do you make yourself stand out to a potential employer? And perhaps even more important, how do you find a potential employer?
Let me start with the second question first, if I may, because I think that's the one that most puzzles people. At this point, when you go to some of the conventional job boards, you know, the job sites like Monster and Career Builder and stuff, the number of jobs that are posted is declining. So people don't quite know where to turn. One of the things that I'm finding, I actually did an experiment. I'm in the Boston area, and so I thought about one of the hospitals in this area that I know is hiring, healthcare is hiring. So I looked, first of all, on one of the big boards to see how many jobs were posted by that hospital, and there were 18 listed. Then I went directly to the hospital website. There were over 100 listed. So the mistake people sometimes make is relying too heavily on those traditional sites, the large sites. It's fine to go to them, but it costs companies money to post those jobs on those sites. So in this tight economy, one of the things that they do to watch their own budgets is they say, if you want to work for me, you find my job, you come to my site, and that's where they post their listings.
Let me just share a quick little story with you and see what lessons you would extract from this. And again, it kind of goes back to the knocking on doors. Back in the early 1970s, I had a partner, Terry O'Connor, and I owned a company called the Woodley Herber Company. We made herbal teas and things. Mm-hmm. And we also had an ad agency affiliated with that and ran the ad agency. And there was a guy who was going to school at MSU. His name was Bill, and he physically showed up one day and said, I want to work with you guys. You know, I want to learn the advertising business, and I want to be involved with what you're doing. And I'll work for almost nothing. I just want to work with you. And we said, we're not hiring. He showed up another three or four times over the course of the next 2 or 3 weeks. And finally I said, okay, if you want, I will give you a job as essentially a secretary, you know, answering the phones and typing letters. Because at that point, we were a relatively small company. We had about 5 employees. We grew to about 20. We didn't have anybody in that role. And, you know, at minimum wage. And he said, I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
Bill ended up 4 years later the vice president of that corporation.
Wow.
When I left the company in 78, was making more money than I was. That kind of story, another one, Louise and I owned a travel agency in Atlanta, International Wholesale Travel, and the retail arm was Sprayberry Travel. It was about a $6 million travel agency. We had a guy show up who'd never sold travel in his life, but he was a good salesman, Steve, and he came in and he said, you know, I want to sell travel. And we were like, you don't know anything about selling travel. And he's like, I know I can do it. I'm going to do it. I said, no. He came back again day after day after day, not literally day after day, but probably twice a week for about 3 or 4 weeks. Didn't always show up, but he would always call. He sent a couple of letters. He was so persistent, I thought, if this guy can sell himself that well to me, then he can sell. We hired him, and again, Steve became, he was just spectacular. He was one of the best employees I've ever had in my entire life. Isn't there something to be said for showing up and knocking on the door, even if every fiber of your being screams, no, I don't want to do that?
There definitely is, and the whole issue of being visible is one of the key things in all stages of your career, from getting the job in the first place to getting the raise and the promotion when times are better and companies are doing those things. They need to know what you're doing. They need to see. And so, yes, showing up, being visible, absolutely.
And these are both – I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I have a funny story as well. Somebody I know was told, she was a teacher of, at the time it was referred to as English as a second language. I think they now say English for speakers of other languages. At any rate, that was her professional specialty. And she heard about a particular school in her area that might have openings. She looked up the address in the phone book, went over there, had a lovely conversation with the administrator, and was offered a job on the spot. She found out later that she actually showed up at the wrong school. By accident, there was a similar school around the corner, and she didn't realize it was a different address, and saw the name of the school, walked in, and, you know, it wasn't even a school that she knew had openings,
yeah.
But they were impressed, and she showed up.
There's an old saying slash cliche, you know, that the secret to success, 90% of the secret to success in life is simply showing up. And it's surprising how you know, cliches are very often truisms. How do you get over past the you're overqualified for the job argument? Is it okay to leave your educational information off your resume, for example, if you know that there's, you know, very few people going to be hiring in your area, maybe nobody hiring in your area in your particular specialty? Just drop that master's degree off there and go with the bachelor's or the bachelor's and go with the high school?
Sometimes people do that. The key thing about a resume is it doesn't have to be a complete history. It's not an autobiography. It's not a full accounting of everything you've ever done or every credential you've ever earned. It really is a document that shows what about your background qualifies you for the next job that you're looking for. So you selectively include the information that shows that match.
Right. Okay, good one. Todd in Grand Rapids, you have a question for Wendy. We're talking with Wendy Gelberg, gentlejobsearch.com, our website. Todd, you're on the air.
Hi, Todd.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question. I'm actually working at the moment, but not in a job that I would like to. I'm definitely qualified for something better, except for the fact that I've got a felony on my record, and it's from about 6 years back. It was a marijuana distribution charge. I don't want to get into the whole thing, but... That pops up nowadays in this day and age. Anybody can do a background check on anybody for like $10 or something. Is there anything I can do to put that in a present myself in a better light? You know, is there anything I do can either to hide that or shield myself from it, or am I better off? Because I've tried, you know, not informing employers sometimes, and then it might find out. And you know, I've never actually been terminated for something like that, but I mean, that's always a fear, you know, that.
You of course can't lie outright, about anything. But sometimes if you're filling out an application and they ask about things like that, rather than answering directly on a form, just saying we'll discuss in interview at least increases the possibility of your not being screened out initially. And then when you're face-to-face with somebody, you can go into detail in whatever way makes sense. Alternatively, I was going to say probably the main thing, and I recommend this for everybody anyway, and this is what we started out talking about, getting in the door through networking. When people know your character, they know that you're somebody who's dependable and honest and all of those things, that's going to offset a lot of the question marks that many of us have in our backgrounds. And it's just, you know, it's about trust. People hire people that they, and they do business with people that they trust.
Absolutely. Well said. Wendy Gelberg is with us. We'll be taking your calls right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Blindingly logical. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
I'm Todd Davis, CEO of LifeLock, and what I'm about to tell you is true. My real Social Security number is 457-55-5462. You may think I'm crazy, but I know my identity is safe. At LifeLock, every member is covered by our $1 million total service guarantee.
Every 3 seconds, someone's identity is stolen. It's not just the money that's being stolen. It's your reputation, your credit, and your valuable time to fix the huge mess. At LifeLock, we aim to prevent identity theft before it happens. And if anything happens happens while you're a client of LifeLock, you'll be protected by our exclusive $1 million total service guarantee. With LifeLock, you'll also see a huge reduction in junk mail and pre-approved credit offers. Call 1-800-643-1385 right now and get 30 days of LifeLock for free. Protect yourself and your family from identity theft. And when you call right now, get 30 days free. Call now, 1-800-643-1385. That's 1-800-643-1385. Again, 1-800-643-1385.
Taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
This is a change in the definition of what America is.
Rachel Maddow.
We've long had a very, 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 very diverse country. We just have been very resistant to the idea that our government ought to look as diverse as our country.
That has now changed.
But it is also a big day for the Democratic Party, and it is a very big day for the Republican Party.
Rachel Maddow.
Which now has no obvious leader, no clear direction.
Evening, 6 to 8.
No clear guiding ideology, either economically or in terms of foreign policy.
On AM 620 KPOJ.
This is the Mortgage Moment, and I'm here with Hayes Barnard, owner of Paramount Equity Mortgage. Hayes, the economy's a mess. Do you have any positive financial news?
Definitely. Thanks to Uncle Sam's bold action, mortgage rates have just taken an abrupt nosedive, as low as, are you ready for this?
What?
5% flat, with an APR of 5.25. These are the lowest rates we've seen in 50 years.
Yeah, but will this really kickstart the economy?
The Fed didn't mince words. Their explicit goal is to push mortgage rates down to a level that stimulates home buying and refinancing activity.
So who will this truly help?
Listen, virtually every homeowner can save money with rates as low as 5% and an APR of 5.25. So pull the trigger and lock in right now, because these rates could be gone in the blink of an eye. At a time when you need it most, Paramount Equity is still committed to saving our neighbors money. So make one simple call to 718-1000 today. 503-718-1000.
License number ML3256.
All right, construction crews. Everybody ready?
Ready in Chicago.
Montgomery.
Honolulu. Oh, who's in Honolulu?
It's Tim from Boston. I just got transferred to Hawaii. Wicked good weather they got here.
Buy one Motorola i576 phone for $69.99. Get up to four free with Sprint, the fastest national push-to-talk network. Call 1-800-NEXTEL-9. Only on the Now Network. Fastest based on initial call setup time. Offers for eligible business accounts only. See Sprint stores for availability. Ends 4/18/09. Subject to 2-year agreement. Up to $36 activation, $200 early termination fees. Credit approval and deposit per line. Restrictions apply.
Prices are up. The cost of running your business is up. Everything's up, except your marketing budget. So what's a small business to do? Email marketing to your current customers with ConstantContact.com. With Constant Contact, you get professional-looking email newsletters that keep your customers coming back. Plus, there's a free 60-day trial with plans as low as $15 a month. So even if the economy's down, your sales don't have to be. Put your marketing on the upswing with ConstantContact.com.
How much could you be saving on car insurance? $300, $400, $500? There's a real easy way to find out. Just go to GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuhr Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at beavertonlodge.com.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
They paid paradise and put up a fucking lie, with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? They paid paradise and put up a fucking lie. They took all the trees and put them in a tree museum, and charge the people a dollar and a half to see them. No, 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 don't it always seem to go.
21 minutes past the hour on the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Program. Wendy Gelberg is with us. She is the certified career coach and author of the new book, The Successful Introvert, How to Enhance Your Job Search and Advance Your Career. Her website, gentlejobsearch.com. Let's take a few quick phone calls here. Wendy, let's see here. Jeffrey in San Rafael, California. Hey, Jeffrey, you're on with Wendy.
Hi. Hello? Jeffrey.
Hey, Jeffrey.
I'm a tech guy. Been in tech for about almost 20 years. It's really difficult to find work in the Bay Area right now for even seasoned pros. I'm going to be 48 years old coming soon, and is age have a lot to do with what's, you know, why I'm not getting a lot of response? If I'm going to switch careers, is it worth it? I mean, if I finish like a 2-year course, people are going to look at a 50-year-old guy and be interested.
Many people do make career changes late in life, and there are opportunities. I don't think that would necessarily be a barrier. Whether it's a factor right now in your job search, it's hard to know. It's possible, for example, that your resume is telegraphing age. If you start out your resume by saying 25 years of experience in IT, then right away they start doing the math. Resumes should only go back 10 to 15 years. There are a number of other things you want to do to downplay age and just focus on the most recent experience. Make sure the old technology is off the resume, and that will increase the likelihood that you'll get in the door. And then once you're face to face, you have the conversation and prove your value. But,
yeah.
But the resume
needs
to get you in.
I know this isn't your area, but this is another strong reason why we have to have, in my opinion, we need a national single-payer health care system, because right now older employees cost employers more than younger employees do because of health insurance costs. And that should not be a factor in hiring. It just absolutely shouldn't. Martha in San Francisco, you're on with Wendy.
Hi, I'm going to sound just like the last person that you talked to, although I'm older. I'm 61. My job was offshore to India. I'm in the Bay Area. Finding another position is near impossible. I have lopped off the old stuff on my resume, and I can't even get a bite.
Yeah. Let me ask if you're doing your job search primarily through the job boards again, or whether you're really working your networks, because sometimes there are opportunities. You just need to get in front of people, but you're going to be able to do that more successfully through the people that you may know. Alternatively, maybe exploring some of the new technologies. There's a lot of green economy related activity out in the California area around Oakland. That might be a place that you can apply some of those skills, businesses that are being launched and programs that are being launched. So, you know, those may not be being advertised yet, but if you start doing some exploration again, what kinds of companies can use your skills, and then approach them, and as Tom said, just show up physically or by letter and resume, just get your information in front of them and tell them what you can do for them.
Have you tried that, Martha?
I actually have been doing some of that. I'm even in school trying to become a hardware person. I have been to local companies around here. I've even had a little part-time work at doing desktop stuff at schools, but it doesn't turn into anything long term, and my COBRA costs are over $500 a month.
Yeah, I know that people really take a hit with that. That's
There's nothing I can do about it. I've had breast cancer, so I can't not have the coverage, because if I lapse, then it'll never be covered for recurrence. So,
Martha, as I really wish you well on this, and there's obviously no easy answer other than persistence. But this also, your case is another brilliant example of how dysfunctional. And thank you for your call. Of how dysfunctional our economy has become as a consequence of political decisions that have been made over the last 30 years. Which again, I realize isn't Wendy's thing, but my particular rant. Sean in Indianapolis. Sean, we just have a little less than a minute before the break. A quick question?
Yeah. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Sean.
Somebody like me that's disabled, I want to work more than I want to walk. And I was basically wondering, how would I get like a telecommuting job, something that I can do from home? Because basically, what Tom just mentioned, he had the guys do, that's what I'm doing. I'm basically saying, look, I'll work for anything. Just get me in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just Wendy, online jobs?
What I would recommend people do if disability is an issue, contact the nearest one-stop career center. Ask them if they have a disability program navigator, and that individual can help connect you with services and opportunities in your area. So
great.
The one-stop career center's disability program navigator.
There you go. Wendy, thanks so much for being with us today.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
It's been great talking with you. Wendy Gelberg, her website, gentlejobsearch.com. Check it out. We'll be right back. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Yeehaw, not a foreign policy. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And the place where we speak the truth to the multinational corporation. I'd really rather you didn't know all about. And it's time now for our Berlusconi alert for the day. Yes, indeed. Silvio Berlusconi, he's putting 3,000, not police officers, but troops on the streets of the cities of Italy. His opposition his political opponents say that he's trying to create a police state. This, by the way, of course, the setup for this, obviously. What do you do when you're a small-time crook and a small-time businessman? You buy a newspaper, then you buy a radio station, then you buy another radio station, then you buy a TV station, then you buy a radio network, then you buy a TV network, then you buy another radio network, then you buy another TV network, then you buy another newspaper. And pretty soon you own 90% of all the media in the country. Well, of course, you run for prime minister, and that's what Silvio Berlusconi did. So now he wants to put 3,000 troops on the streets of Italian cities. And what is the rationale for this? Well, he says on the one hand, he's doing it to combat violent rape. Yes, he promises to decrease rape. On the other hand, he says, and I quote, "We cannot field a big enough force to avoid this risk of rape. We would need so many soldiers because our women are so beautiful." So, if you can find any logic in that, so this is why his opposition says no. He just wants to put soldiers on the streets. This guy is a secret Mussolini. Our Berlusconi alert for the day. You've heard the old saying that dogs have family, cats have staff. Last night, it was kind of an exciting day yesterday anyway. The Keith Olbermann's people called and asked me to be on the show last night. It was wonderful being on the show with Keith Olbermann. You can see the video of that over at our home site webpage, tomhartman.com. And, of course, on MSNBC's website. And finally, the adrenaline wears off, and finally Louise and I get to sleep. And about midnight, actually it was maybe 12:30, middle of the night for us, because we get up around 4, middle of the night, one of our cats, this was not Higgins, it was one of the co-conspirators, and I say this as somebody who's had dogs ever since I was born, up until the last few years ago, our last dog died, but we've always had cats too. I think they hatched a conspiracy. Their food bowl was empty. So this cat comes up very quietly. We're sound asleep. In fact, Louise and I are curled up around each other and kind of spooning. And here's this glass of water on the headboard of the bed right above us. The cat brings it right over the edge and flips it over. And this whole full glass of water drops right on top of our heads at midnight. So if I'm a little punchy today, you now know why. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Oh, before I get to your calls, I just wanted to share this rant with you. This article was in today's Financial Times. Two pieces to it, actually. The first, Right-wing rule ends in Iceland. After almost 20 years of right-wing rule in Iceland, it came to an ignominious end yesterday after the president asked the left-leaning Social Democratic Party to form a new government after the previous government collapsed on Monday. Yes, right-wing economics dies a sudden death in Iceland, as we discussed with Dean Baker. But here, on the other side of the page here, this is an interesting one. I have said a number of times that I'm concerned that the recent policy, and recent broadly, even over the last few years, of Israel with regard to the Gaza Strip has been counterproductive for Israel, as well as obviously for the people in Gaza. And here, you know, the point I keep making is, you know, the Bush administration would say, got to have democracy, got to have elections, got to have elections. And then guess who gets elected? Hamas. And so here's the headline. And this is absolutely making the point that I've been making all this time. The headline in today's Financial Times, this by Anna Field, Fifield in Gaza City and Tobias Buck in Jerusalem. This is not a commentary. This is a straight news story. Headline, Hamas takes credit for helping families as Israel turns off the flow of cash. And then the first two paragraphs of the article, the Gaza Strip is running perilously short of money with its banks unable to pay out salaries after Israel stopped allowing deliveries of cash in the Palestinian territory 2 months ago. The only group that appears to be immune from the cash crisis is, ironically, Hamas. The Islamist group, which is the largest of Israel's three-week military offensive, has promised to distribute as much as 40 million euros, the $52 million, to families whose homes were demolished. Hamas officials said they would send out checks of 4,000 euros each to victims in the coming days. You want to win people's hearts and minds, build their homes, build their roads, build their septic systems, build their electric systems, build their hospitals, build their schools, make life better for them. They will be your friends. They will work with you. You want to create suicide bombers? You want to create multi-generational enemies? You want to create people who will, to their dying breath, act in ways that are totally irrational. And suicide bombers, talk about, you know, at the top of the scale of irrationality, at a certain level, you know, at the level of survival, they will continue to behave that way forever. You want to do that? Bomb them, blow up their houses, kill their kids, kill their parents. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Kevin in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Kevin, what's on your mind today?
Hi, I just want to give a bit of advice to the guy who's in technology, because I'm in technology, and I'm in my late 30s.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest he goes into programming. Programming, that technology hasn't changed in 50 years.
You're talking about software.
Yeah, software development and programming.
You know, I've gotten in the last 2 days, Kevin, 4 emails that are not, you know, super spam emails. They're from companies that got past my spam filters because they were personalized to me and they mentioned details of my company, Mythical Research, which owns this show. Offering to develop widgets for us for the web, offering to do programming for us on the web, and several of them were in India, one was in Malaysia, and one was in some other country, I forget, Latvia. And these were all good, clean, you know, articulate offers. How can you say people should go into programming when all these low-wage countries are exporting programming now?
Because really, there's... From those countries, you see, programming is a mindset, and because of the language they speak, India, Sanskrit,
mm-hmm.
it's very similar to programming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's more.
So they have an advantage over us, and they're willing to work
exactly.
cheaper. So why would somebody want in the United States go into programming?
Because at the end, people are going to want local people too.
Yeah, well, there is that.
You know, programming is something because I know programmers here. And they pretty much call the shots here in New York
yeah.
City.
Yeah.
In a lot of situations. But it's just, and unfortunately, a lot of them are Russian and all that because you can't get Americans who have that mindset to do that job.
Yeah. Very interesting.
You know, so it's very much an answer. You know, and again, not everyone is equipped mentally for programming, but I know for myself, I'm 37. And I'm getting up there. I'm at that borderline age where maybe I'm not going to be as relevant in the technology world anymore. Mm-hmm. Because networking and repair and all that, eventually, as people get more sophisticated in computers, they're going to, that's going to be less and less relevant. You need to get into...
No, I think your point is well made, Kevin. Thank you for making it. I think more and more also people are using social networks. And social networks, online social networks, are very, very much the province of 20-somethings and 30-somethings right now, and teens who are moving into the job market, toward the job market. And that's an area where Wendy's advice, I think, was very wise, is to use these networks. And if you don't know how, get into them. Dave in Portland, Oregon on KPOJ. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Hey, I just wanted to ask you about, I got a real issue with Barack Obama and extending this reasonable approach to trying to get House Republicans and the Republicans in the Senate to go to follow, you know, to give them support.
Right.
My question is, what do we do? I guess my question mainly was, where are all the smart Republicans that you and I may have been growing up with through the years? Why are they not speaking out now and giving us some kind of indication that they do have a brain?
They were purged from the party, Dave. They were literally purged. They were literally purged from the party, starting with the Gingrich Revolution. The smart Republicans were just, you know, they were purged from the party. They're gone.
I know, and it's like the.
Now here's the thing with regard to Obama, though, and Dave, thanks for raising the question. Barack Obama has gone to the Republicans and he said, you know, let's be postpartisan here about this. Let's not talk about it in terms of party politics. Let's talk about it in terms of the greater good. We can discuss philosophy. That's an appropriate thing, but let's not make it political. The Republicans, of course, are trying to make it political. John Boehner is, doing his very best to make it as political as he possibly can, tragically. But that's about all he's got. But the reality is that Obama is going to get his package. There are, you know, he's got enough votes just with the Democrats, by and large, and all he needs is one or two Republicans in the Senate. I think he's going to get that without a problem. So as a consequence of this is a very smart politics. As a consequence of this, he is going to look like he reached out a hand. The Republicans are going to look like they slapped it down. The package is going to get passed anyway, and hopefully there'll be some success associated with it.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
What would Hartman do? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
Tom Hartman here. You've heard me talk a lot about the special men's vitamin called Beta Prostate. I keep bringing it up because every single man listening should take care of their prostate health. When you're younger, your prostate gland is about the size of a walnut, but as you grow older, it can swell up to the size of a lemon. This could mean getting up at night for bathroom trips, difficulty urinating, even sexual dysfunction. So you've got to see your doctor for checkups and take Beta Prostate every day. Not too long ago, we invited the formulator of Beta Prostate, research chemist Roger Mason, on my show. He told us that prostate problems are a growing epidemic, and statistics say that 3/4 of all American men will eventually have prostate problems. And now Roger Mason will be extending his special offer, buy two, get one free. And he's even throwing in his book, The Natural Prostate Cure, for free, plus a money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803. Call now because this is an amazing value. 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803.
You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies,
what would it be? Zero worth? It's Mike Malloy.
I mean, how do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt?
Evening, 8 to 11. AM 620 KDOJ. 620KDOJ.com.
Get full details on the example policy at selectquote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Did you know that right now you could be paying too much for your life insurance? It's true, because right now term life insurance is at its lowest rates in years. So you could be saving money. How much? At SelectQuote, we shop and compare for you. So a 40-year-old man in excellent health could get a 10-year, $500,000 term life policy for under $19 a month. That's right, $500,000 of term life for under $19 a month. How much could we save you? Give us a call. 1-800-600-1312. At SelectQuote, we've helped hundreds of thousands of Americans do what's right for their families and save money. We're here to help you, too. So, want to save money on your term life insurance fast? Go to SelectQuote.com or pick up the phone and get your free quote. 1-800-600-1312. That's 1-800-600-1312.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
You may think Hollywood and history have told this story, but our moon has another side, a shadowland of dreams, politics, and human cost. Portland Center Stage presents the world premiere of Apollo by Nancy Keystone. Whatever you thought you knew about the space race or the theater, Apollo will open your eyes. Call 503-445-3700 or visit pcs.org.
Hey, Carl Wolfson from The Morning Show. January is National Eye Care Month, a time when many of us use our new health insurance plans to get our eyes checked. Sadly, millions of people around the world don't have this luxury. This month, stop by Eyes on Broadway and donate your old glasses, which will be redistributed when Dr. Tom Barreto travels to Peru this March to perform eye exams for those less fortunate. A great way to start out the new year. Donate your old glasses at 2300 Northeast Broadway or learn more at eyesonbroadway.com.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. True confession, I'm hungry. I can't stop thinking about the healthy fish and chips, classic or spicy Baja fish taco platters, crisp salads, and Dana's homemade soups at the Hawthorne Fish House and the Corbett Fish House. Salmon, halibut, catfish, or cod, it's all delicious. If you want a taste of the Midwest, try the perch, walleye, or even the fried cheese curds. They make a mean, spicy black bean garden burger as well. Hawthorne Fish House Southeast and Corbett Fish House Southwest.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
And all of us good folks are in distress, but I'm gonna get something off my chest. 1932 won't be long. When you place your vote, please don't vote wrong. Vote away the blues, the breadline blues.
It's a rich man's job to make some rules in order to rid my breadline blues. Now listen, you folks, it ain't no joke. We're gonna do something or we're all gonna croak. I can't get a job, we've all been robbed. We got no money and the corn's all cob. Got nothing but the blues, the breadline blues.
Yep, it's the breadline blues, an actual song from 1931. And we're back there, we're getting back there. Downright strange stuff going on in Chicago. There's a 14-year-old kid walks into a police station wearing a police uniform. They assign him to a squad car, and he drives around for 5 hours before anybody figures out he's not a cop. Maybe the problems in Illinois don't just begin and end with Governor Blago. 14 years old, this kid. Yeah. You know, they say you know you're getting old when the cops look young. I think this goes a little beyond that. 866-303-2270, our telephone numbers. And Christine in Phoenix. Hey, Christine, what's on your mind?
Well, you know, electronic medical records has me worried. I know it can save us money, but I also see a great hazard. You know, we can't keep people from stealing our identity as it is, and are we going to allow all these people that think everything is their business to crawl into our medical records? It really worries me. I've worked with OB-GYNs and family docs, family practice docs, who take crotch shots of rape exams, genital warts that need to be removed, infected episiotomies. I really don't want to see that stuff on the web. And, you know, our records also give right-wing extremists the right to life crazies access to our birth control records, abortion records, DNC records. It lets them know who the docs are that do this sort of thing, who the patients are that want it and have it, and it allows them to find out where we live. And I don't think it's anybody's business. And if we can't keep them from getting our Social Security numbers and stealing our identities, how are we going to be able to keep them out of our medical records?
Yeah, excellent question. On the other hand, Christine, How can you keep them from, you know, how, for example, if somebody really wanted to get your medical records and went to the trouble of finding out who your doctor was, which probably wouldn't be all that difficult if they were really trying to track you down personally or, say, some star or something.
You know what?
I
run medical records departments.
No,
it's not so easy when they were physical.
Right. No,
you
understand.
Had to come in and,
but let me finish my question.
Okay.
What if somebody gets a job in one of those departments and simply, you know, walks out one day with the file? Or what if somebody goes to somebody who works in one of those departments where it's all physical records and they say, listen, I'll give you $10,000 for Christine's records?
And I can't even tell you the legal ramifications for those people. I had a surgeon once who was at a different hospital who wanted records on his patient. He came in, and the little clerk made the mistake of handing it to him because he was raving and screaming and demanding her job and everything if she wouldn't give it to him. He lost his position at that hospital. She lost hers, and my boss, the head of the department, lost hers.
Wow. Okay.
And so,
you make a compelling case, Christine. You make a compelling case against electronic medical records, and frankly, I doubt we're going to stop it.
Those records are sacred.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And in this age of Twitter and everything else, of everybody, you know, knowing what everybody's doing all the time, I think that, frankly, there's a whole generation growing up that doesn't even really have a clear understanding of the concept of privacy, maybe, or has a completely different perspective on it, shall we say. Paul in Farmington Hills, Michigan. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. Yeah, Tom, I'm a late bloomer liberal, and half my lifetime I was a huge follower of the economic principles of logic for capitalism and the writings of the writings of Ludwig von Mises and Friedrich Hayek, Ayn Rand. I was a huge believer in the philosophy of objectivism, and yet the irony is objectivists would view me now as a follower of mysticism, but when you refuse to recognize, you know, your evidence of the senses, recognizing reality when it comes to when it's smacking you in the face, your philosophical base becomes a mystic mind belief system that you refuse to let go.
Libertarianism is very seductive. You know, in the mid 70s, I actually for a year or so hung out with the Libertarian Party in Lansing. I had a bumper sticker on my filing cabinet.
Were you familiar with Murray Rothbard too? And his he split from Ayn Rand in the 50s, and then they had a battle back and forth between libertarians and objectivism. Are you familiar with that battle, that situation too?
Yeah, I'm not a scholar of the history of the movements, but my point is that it sounds so nice. You know, yeah, just freedom for everybody, you know, laissez-faire, you know. But the practical reality is if you want to see a true laissez-faire, you know, nation run with true laissez-faire economics, look at Zimbabwe.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, very little government.
It's crazy. And fortunately for me, and thanks to Air America, too, I started listening to you guys since March of 2003, and I was starting to pull away from it, and thankfully for me, because it's changed my life in my thinking, and I have empathy for people that they'll never let wrongheadedness go. I really do.
Yeah.
And I don't think we have to worry about conservatives, and don't beat up on conservatives. Have empathy for the people that you have a percentage of population right now that wants to see this president fail, which means they're wishing for their own demise.
I know, and they're not bad people. They're not evil people. They're just misguided. They just don't get it. Now, I'm not putting Limbaugh in that category. I mean, here's Limbaugh, who's got his $400 million contract, his hundreds of millions of dollars, and his OxyContin. You know, he's doing very well. Thank you very much, and we can all take a leap in the ocean, and he pretty much doesn't care. But the poor people who are following him, it really is. Paul, thank you very much for the call. Very well said. Yeah, the people who are following him are the ones who are the true. You know, it would be demeaning to call them suckers and things like that, because a lot of them are very smart people. A lot of them are very well intentioned. But the reality is that the economic philosophy put forward by Limbaugh, that whole worldview that is called conservative today, that Barry Goldwater, frankly, largely would not recognize, is toxic. And really what it is it's oligarchy and kleptocracy. It's about rule by the rich and theft by those who can steal. And all the more the tragedy for America. Coming up, Tom Philbin. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club.
providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, you know, sometimes you know what you know, and sometimes you know what you don't know, and sometimes you don't know what you don't know, and sometimes even...
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Could it be everything you know is wrong about serial killers? Could it be everything you know is wrong about... Well... serial killers. Tom Philbin is with us. He's the author of the new book, The Killer Book of Serial Killers. And it's published by Sourcebooks, sourcebooks.com, and of course in bookstores and online sources all around the world. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Tom.
You are also a longtime freelance writer. You've written 9 cop novels, a member of the Authors Guild. You've won two quotes.
Yes.
Say
can
what?
You hear the haunted sound of my voice?
Yeah, there you go.
Freelance writing is not the best, but anyway.
Yeah, there you go. I'm curious, Tom, your book, you have toward the end of the book this question and answer, you know, where you kind of a series of questions that you can answer, and if you answer yes, then you're a serial killer, and they're all based on the lives of real serial killers. Let me toss one at you. A person whose father is very, very critical and very, very absent, whose mother is angry and domineering, who at the age of 7, his sister dies, and his family never mentions the fact that she died. He does not go to a funeral for her. Her name is never mentioned. In fact, the day after she dies, her parents go play golf. He is sent off months later to boarding schools where he spends literally the rest of his life on the other side of the country, and pretty much never spends time with his parents again. As a teenager, the major interaction with his father is getting in a fist fight with him and becomes a serious alcoholic, and then goes on to make jokes about the fact that he was responsible for the death of over 100 people. Would that person qualify in your mind as a serial killer?
I would think so, yeah.
Do you well, recognize you know, the profile?
No, I don't. My brother did this book with me. I don't remember.
Well, the person I'm describing to you is George W. Bush.
What? Really?
Yeah. Honest to God. And in an interview with Tucker Carlson, and Tucker was totally creeped out by this because he was a big Bush fan and a conservative until this happened, where Bush was talking when he was governor of Texas. And as you note in your book, he signed over 153 death warrants. He bragged right. to Tucker Carlson that, A, he had never spent more than 20 minutes reviewing a death penalty case. And when he was talking about the Carla Faye Tucker case, he said this is Bush speaking to Tucker Carlson. He says, she came to me and she says, and then Bush puts his hands together and starts wringing them, you know, the way a terrified person would wring their hands, and says, save me, Governor, please save me. And then Bush starts laughing hysterically at his own joke of imitating the woman that he put to death. And at that point, Tucker Carlson tells this story about how he became totally creeped out by this guy.
Yeah, well, he's not connected to anything he's done. I think of him as a murderer too. I mean,
yeah.
he's killed over 4,000 young people and
Americans. Not to mention a couple hundred thousand Iraqis.
How he's gotten away with it, I haven't got a clue.
You've got a number of people out there. Actually, Vince Bugliosi probably the most prominent.
I can't kill a mouse and I feel guilty about it. I mean, it's just.
Yeah.
I mean, you write in agony over this stuff, and not to feel that is just,
incredible, you know.
Yeah. And so what are the characteristics, not to make this too political, because I know your book is not a political book. It's just a fascinating insight into the lives and minds and processes of serial killers. But it seems from reading several of the stories in your book and looking at the profiles that one of the common denominators is that young age serious damage that typically has to do with death, like Bush with his sister, that kind of thing, that just causes a child to go into, a state of just absolute unresolvable agony.
Yeah, well, what happens is that they start off in their childhood. That's when it all happens. That's the kind of the melting pot. That's not the melting pot, but the pot that cooks them. And they normally very terribly abused by the parents, by the mother, by the father. But they have to swallow this. They have to bury this stuff. And then as time goes by, become teenagers, they start to kind of act out. They will kill small animals, you know, like Henry Lee Lucas, the guy in Texas. He was skinning animals alive when he was 10. And then it goes on. And then in their 20s, that's when they live in a symbolic world. And the people who have abused them and terrified them, and I mean, I'm talking heavy-duty abuse, off the scale, then they start killing these symbols. Like Bundy, a guy you had out in your area, you know, Bundy would kill only women were pretty with hair, long dark hair parted in the middle. Guess who had that? His mother, Lillian, you know. And it's just but their common denominator is abuse in childhood. And if you see a child with setting fires or cruelty to animals, or for some reason, I still don't understand this, wetting a bed, then you better your alarm bell.
Well, that might just be an indication of anxiety. This is one of the things that you might want to check out Justin Frank's book Bush on the Couch. George W. Bush told his biographer that when he was 10 years old, one of his favorite things to do was to stick firecrackers in the butts of frogs and watch them blow up. Is that the kind of thing that a serial killer would do?
Absolutely, absolutely true. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is
that goes beyond. Kicking a cat or scaring a cat or scaring a dog or something like that.
Yeah.
With kids sometimes do stuff like that. Sticking firecrackers in the butt of a frog, is like, that's right down the alley. That's right there.
That's scary to hear. We're talking with Tom Philbin, the guy who would know, who along with Michael Philbin wrote The Killer Book of Serial Killers, Crime Scene Do Not Cross, the subtitle, and a longtime freelance writer and also the author of a number of other excellent works. Tom, if it's possible that some people are serial killers in ways that, you know, like Ted Bundy, they get caught and they get sent to prison. Is it equally possible? And I ask because I think I saw this when I was in Africa during the war in Uganda, with the Lord's Army, that there were people who characterized themselves as rebels or as political leaders who seemed to me like they were just sociopaths, that they enjoyed murdering and raping, and war gave them an excuse for it. Are there options, opportunities in our society for serial killers to actually satisfy the need for being a serial killer and yet receive reward for it, essentially?
I don't get your question.
Well, you know, I guess George Bush is an example, but, you know, in the military, for example, there are some...
Oh, yeah, absolutely true. Well, Mike, you take a guy like... Audie Murphy, the most decorated soldier of World War II. Now, this guy killed 270 Germans. But, you know, he was raised, he was picking cotton when he was 5. His father deserted the family. They lived out of a freight train. His mother died when she was 50. And when he hit the war, he's a small guy, when he hit the war, he was just a bomb ready to go off. And he exploded in Europe, and he got a Congressional Medal of Honor. As a matter of fact, his commanding officer said he should have gotten it twice, but they rewarded that. But it was a rage at him that he was not afraid of anything. And you know, you have to just say, I don't care if I live anymore. If you get the Medal of Honor, you have one point in your life you said, I don't care if I live anymore. You know.
Yeah.
And you have to have this rage. And I agree with you. That's a very good perception, I think, on your part.
And something I think that we as a society need to look out for is, you know, I've I have actually our well, I don't want to go into the details of it, but I have a friend who was in prison who made the comment once to me that he thought that several of the guards that he knew were far more dangerous, as just dangerous individuals, than most of the prisoners.
Sure.
You know, that there are some really scary people out there, and that we as a society very often enable them, and that we should really reconsider this. Your thoughts on that in the half minute here we have left, Tom Philbin?
Sure.
Okay. Sure. And so your favorite, I use the word oddly, who's the scariest serial killer in your book, Tom?
Albert Fish.
Why?
Albert Fish was a cannibal. He killed children. And he had every single perversion known to man. That's what a psychiatrist at Bellevue said. And
amazing.
Sick needles into his body. It was just a savage beyond. I mean, I always said, and I have a weird sense of humor. I said if they had a man of the century in terms of a serial killer, he'd be guest of honor. He'd be honored by all the other serial killers in the room. You know,
finish your sentence.
Hello?
Yeah. But Tom, we have to wrap it up here. It's The Killer Book of Serial Killers by Tom Philbin. And you can check it out at sourcebooks.com. Thanks, Tom.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoying Republicans by defending the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
The hardest part of any home improvement project is finding a good quality contractor, somebody who's going to do the job right, complete it on time and within budget, and not going to hassle you. So who do you call? Who do you trust when you need a plumber, a painter, an electrician? I'll tell you who to call. Like me, call Angie's List. Before we signed up for Angie's List, we had a disaster contractor install a kitchen counter. We used Angie's List to find a handyman to show up and fix everything. They really came through for us. More than 650,000 homeowners nationwide use Angie's List for ratings and reviews on more than 300 service categories, even doctors. It's a word-of-mouth network for consumers. Angie's List is a growing collection of homeowners' real-life experiences with local service companies. Now the people who join Angie's List, they're like you. They're looking for a way to find trustworthy companies that perform high-quality work. To join Angie's List, go to AngiesList.com and eliminate the fear of hiring the wrong company. I joined Angie's List, and you should too today at AngiesList.com. 1-888-888-LIST. 888-888-LIST.
Carl Wolfson and friends.
Let's get to Joe the plumber. He's covering the war in Israel.
6 to 9.
You're not going to believe what he said.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think journalists should be anywhere allowed war. And if you're going to sit there and say, well, look at this atrocity, well, you don't know the full story behind it half the time.
Yeah, you know, we should just take what the Pentagon says. No atrocities. You know, that's just war.
It's Carl Wolfson.
I think he's one of those people that had his 5 minutes of fame and now thinks he's really smart.
I kind of lean that he's an idiot.
Morning, 6 to 9.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Portland's only progressive talk station.
What if I said you could erase your wrinkles, tighten your skin, and make frown lines disappear from view, all without surgery or injections? With all the creams you've tried, you're probably skeptical. So I'm going to prove it to you by sending you a free trial of a scientific breakthrough called Hydroxytone. Shed years from your appearance faster than you ever thought possible.
I looked at her and I was just, wow, she looked so young.
I told her I couldn't believe how smooth her face looks. She's lost, 10 years at least?
Request your risk-free trial of this proven breakthrough today. The results are so impressive. Hydroxytone was given away in VIP gift bags at international film festivals.
She always looked good to me, but now I can't believe how young she looks.
Call now for your free trial of Hydroxytone. For a limited time, try it before you buy it. 1-800-900-4211. But hurry. When this offer's gone, it's gone. Call 1-800-900-4211. 1-800-900-4211.
Is your computer running slowly? Does it take more than 3 seconds for your email to load? Are you getting pop-ups? How about spam? Well, if you're experiencing any of these symptoms, your computer and your privacy are at risk. Because these are the telltale signs of a virus. It'll only get worse until you act. Get a free diagnosis at mycleanpc.com and optimize your PC.
I got the free diagnosis, and now my computer is lightning fast.
My computer never crashes anymore.
Talk about optimization. My computer isn't even this fast at work.
MyCleanPC.com will remove spyware, viruses, and virus-infected emails, all while optimizing your PC performance. It's all-in-one protection, and it's been raved about by USA Today and Computer World. The diagnosis is free. Just log on to MyCleanPC.com. Even if you have antivirus software, your computer could still be infected. Find out instantly with a free comprehensive diagnosis at MyCleanPC.com. If your computer is running slowly or you're still getting pop-ups, you need to get your free diagnosis from MyCleanPC.com. That's MyCleanPC.com.
How much could you be saving on car insurance? $300, $400, $500? There's a real easy way to find out. Just go to GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuhr Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at BeavertonLodge.com.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to your radio support group for We the People of the United States of America and planet Earth. Our conservative alert for the day, House Minority Whip Congressman Eric Cantor, the Republican from Virginia, continuing to lie. Yes, lie. I use that word intentionally about the economic recovery bill, claiming that it's going to give more money to grass on the National Mall than small business. Yes, this is a lie. And he's had plenty of time to read the actual Congressional Budget Office report, but he continues to lie about it. It's just very strange. Perhaps, you might want to just call Congressman Cantor's office and ask why he's lying about the Congressional Budget Office report. Might be a little entertaining way to spend your afternoon. I wouldn't call more than once, of course. The toll-free numbers for Congress, you can find them at callcongress.org. And it's Eric Cantor, the Republican from Virginia. He says, well, the lasting problem with this bill, not only will it not deliver real stimulus, even the Congressional Budget Office says it's not stimulative. That, by the way, is a lie. It is, people and business and entrepreneurs are going to look out in the future and see trillions and trillions of dollars of additional debt. Well, that, of course, is the product of Reaganomics. Then he goes on to say, I think, first of all, you have to focus on actual stimulus. You got CBO saying that only 25% goes out in the first year. No, they didn't say that. That was a Republican lie. So why is it that Eric Cantor continues to promulgate these lies? Probably because he thinks he can get away with it. And maybe he will. Who knows? But I think it's useful from time to time to call these guys out on their lies. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Max in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Max, what's up?
Good. Good morning. Good afternoon, I should say. I want to talk about Norm Coleman and Al Franken.
Yeah, did you see how that thing blew up yesterday where Norm Coleman's lawyers got one of the disenfranchised voters on the stand, and it turned out that the guy had actually had his girlfriend fill out his absentee ballot, which, by the way, I don't know about Minnesota, but here in Oregon, that's a crime you can go to prison for.
I think it's illegal here in the state of Missouri, but I'd have to double check. Well, I'm about to say it's not original. I don't know if anyone ever said it before on your show. But Norm needs to get over it. No one wants to lose by 200 votes. Al Gore lost by 600 and something. I dare say that if I could go into the Akashic Records and look for all of Mr. Coleman's quotes, both recorded electronically and in print, maybe back in 2000 he was saying that Al Gore ought to get rid of it. I know a lot of his brethren did. He needs to get over it.
Yeah, he well said, Max. And in fact, if you don't have to go into the Akashic Record to use Edgar Casey's brilliant phrase, and if you haven't read any of particularly Jess Stern's book on Casey, go out and get it. But in any case, you don't have to go to the Akashic Record for it. You can just go back and look at what Norm Coleman was saying just a few months ago when it looked like he was ahead. And he said to Al Franken, when he was a couple hundred votes ahead of Franken before they actually did the recount, and he was trying to avoid a recount, he said, you know, you should save the taxpayers. I'm paraphrasing here, but they're pretty close to the words that he said. You should save the taxpayers the time and save us all the expense and the expense of the recount and just do the right thing and can, you know, admit that you've lost. Right. 866-303-2270. JR in Vancouver. Hey, JR.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. What's up?
This obstructionism from the Republicans is just ridiculous. And I have a friend that I haven't talked to since last May, before the election. He was a registered Republican, voted for George Bush twice. And I just talked to him today. And he said that he could not believe the way the Republicans have been acting and what he's been hearing on these conservative talk show hosts.
Yeah.
And I told him, look, you didn't realize before that these guys were spouting out a bunch of vitriol because they were defending the president. But now that they're attacking the president, you realize that it's all just anger and deceitful, you know, hateful commentary, you know, and you're more of a reasonable person than that. And I think there's a lot of conservatives out there that understand that. You know, for example, this electronic medical records issue. They're complaining about that. I wish they were complaining that hard against the Homeland Security bills.
Yeah. Yeah, doing away with posse comitatus or doing away with the Fourth Amendment or the FISA legislation or, you know, on and on it goes. Yeah, absolutely right and well said, JR. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Tom in Seattle. Hey, Tom, got a minute here before the break. What's up? Tom?
Hey, Tom.
You're on the air.
Hello?
You're on the air, Tom.
Okay. You know, I'm concerned, listening to your last guest, I'm just concerned about the soldiers coming home, Blackwater people coming home, joining the police force. You'd think we'd see a rise in police-involved shootings. And another thing is...
Yeah, I don't think that going off to war turns you into a serial killer. You know, and that was our guest's point. I mean, and if somebody comes back from war with post-traumatic stress disorder and they represent a potential threat of violence to themselves and others, they need treatment. They need treatment. And that's where, you know, Larry Scott is so eloquent about this. This is where the Veterans Administration should be. We need to be looking at mental illness the same as physical illness. It's treatable. It's solvable. PTSD. Is something that can be treated, and if it's so bad it's not treatable, we need to say that person is suffering a war injury just as bad as if they'd had their legs blown off, and they can't work.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Wasn't Jesus a community organizer? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Electrical banana is gonna be a sudden grace. They call me Mellow Yellow.
34 minutes past the hour. And this from our mailbag from Good Dog. He says, Tom, I wanted to mention that there was a dead pigeon in my neighbor's backyard. Don't know how that fits with your theory on pigeons. I'm telling you, Good Dog, it was not a pigeon. It was a cleverly painted dove. You just have to learn how to distinguish these things. The pigeons are robots spying on us from the planet Xenu. Okay, here are speaking of otherworldly things, this it's not being voted on now, but it will be voted on this afternoon in all probability, this stimulus package. They're going to extend unemployment benefits. This is going to be a $12.7 billion piece of this. This thing called SNAP. This is a temporary increase in the maximum food stamp level above the 2009 level. That's going to cost about $24 billion. The TFAP, boy, aren't the Democrats great at coming up with acronyms. This makes me, I want to bang my head against the wall. Anyhow, it's an increase in funds for purchase of additional commodities, increase in state, tribal, local distribution costs, food bank, infrastructure grants, things like that. There's WIC. The increased funding to make up for the shortfall not covered in the current continuing resolution, that's $50 million. CSFP, the school lunch program, this is $1 billion. Medical payments to states, FMAP. When are the Democrats going to learn how to name things? Come on, guys. This is $15 billion. LIHEAP. Oh, that sounds great. This is actually low-income heating assistance. That's $5 billion. I mean, I think these programs are all wonderful. I just would like to see them marketed appropriately. These guys need to read my book, Cracking the Code. Yeah, there's a thread over on Democratic Underground yesterday where I said, you know, I don't mention my books that much. And somebody said, yes, you do. I guess it's true. What can I say? Anyhow, job creation on via down payment on rebuilding America's infrastructure, $100 billion. It's great. This is great stuff. It doesn't even have a name. I mean, they didn't even come up with an acronym as bad as LIHEAP for it, at least to the best of my knowledge. In general, by the way, no funds for Afghanistan or Iraq wars, no funds for defense procurement, no waiver of existing environmental laws. Of course, that is how the Bush administration thought you'd stimulate the economy. And any of these jobs that are created, the Davis-Bacon Act will be applied to them. Now, this was a piece of legislation that was passed, as I recall, back during the Johnson administration, which says that if federal monies are used for a project, or maybe even state, I'm not sure the exact details of Davis-Bacon, but the bottom line is if government money is used for a construction project, then the contractors who are hired have to pay what's called a prevailing wage. They have to pay at the local wage level, which is typically the local union wage level. So in other words, these end up being actually good jobs. In terms of infrastructure, we're looking at $64 billion worth of shovel-ready projects, mostly under the transportation. This is according to the American Association of State and Highway Transportation folks and the Progressive Caucus Budget Alternative. The $100 billion to accelerate green technology. I think of this as infrastructure. I don't know why they say that weatherizing isn't infrastructure. You know, solar initiatives. This is infrastructure stuff, too. Capitalizing a national infrastructure bank. That's $6 billion. The previous one I mentioned is $100 billion. $165 billion to create 21st century classrooms. That's huge infrastructure investment. Funding the Job Corps. This is less than $1 billion for National Job Corps. $700 million. Less than $1 billion. But, you know, hey, a great thing. Reserve funds for long-term mega projects. These are not necessarily shovel-ready, but they're going to be important. This is $25 billion. So they've got short-term, medium-term, long-term human capital, investing in human capital. You know, I'm a big fan of this. Child care and block development and development block grants, $1 billion. That'll cover another 164,000 kids, not anywhere near enough. Overhauling and modernizing the UI system, $3 to $4 billion. Reversing cuts in federal child support enforcement funding. These were, you know, reversing cuts put in by the Bush administration. This could cost less than $1 billion, $700 million, and so on. It just, you know, there's a long laundry list here of things, but those are the highlights, in my opinion, and some of the important ones. So we'll see how these guys vote on these things, and, you know, hopefully it all comes out right. Sherry in Glenwood, Washington. Hey, Sherry, what's on your mind today?
Well, yesterday I heard you say that about you don't mention your books too much, and I kind of laughed to myself. He does, too. And then today when you said that again, I wanted to tell you, thank heaven you do. I really am glad that you do, because they're good books, and they're important books. And,
well, thank you.
And so I very much appreciate it. I go out and buy them when you do that. And I haven't read them all, but I just like you so much that I buy your books.
Well,
and I bought one that I returned that I'm going to go back and buy because I felt guilty. I really do. I think you're wonderful. And I'm
well,
glad
thank you.
You,
you know, there's always libraries, too, that you can get free books. So
guess that's true. But, you write wonderful books. I discovered you by accident on the ADDD stuff. And so thank you.
Thank you, Sherry. And that was what you called about. Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Donna in Detroit. Hey, Donna, what's up?
Hey, good afternoon, Tom. Hey, I was just wondering if you could comment on if you know anything more about back in, what is it, September that they passed the initial legislation for the first part of this bailout to the banks.
Mm-hmm.
They said that there was quote-unquote pork that was rolled into it, and I know that one of those things was the issue about parity for mental health services to be on parity with physical health treatment covered by insurance.
Right.
And I haven't heard much about it since. You know, in the spirit of you talking earlier about veterans coming home with PTSD, and that's going to be more vital or more necessary than ever, not just for servicemen, but, you know, for our own civilians here that are just going through hell with these economic times. Do you know where that's at and when that could be expected to be rolled out? Have you heard much on that?
I don't know where it's at. I do know that mental health parity, this is, you know, viewing mental health as a disease just like physical health and making sure that the funding levels are appropriate, you know, appropriately balanced just like they are with physical health across our healthcare system, but in particular in those parts funded by state and federal governments, Medicaid, Medicare, and the like, is very, very high on the priorities broadly of the Democratic Party, and in particular the Progressive Caucus within the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
As to the details of it, I confess I have not been keeping track of that, so I can't give you a specific answer. But thank you for bringing up the issue, because it's an issue that needs to be brought up over and over and over again. We have a caller in Albuquerque. I'm sorry, I don't have your name up on the board. Your name is in Albuquerque, and you're not Murray? Marie? No Marie. All righty. we'll pass on that. Before I get back to calls, I wanted to share this. This is incredible. Here we have a conservative congressman, Phil Gingrey, the Republican from Georgia, chairman of the Conservative Republican Study Committee, was talking with Politico, right? The publication. And about how Limbaugh and other conservative talkers, he says, they can stand back and throw bricks, but they're not offering real leadership. So what happens is that, you know, Limbaugh goes on a rant about this guy, and he gets a zillion phone calls to his office. And so he calls into the Limbaugh show and starts groveling, you know, blithering, you know, pathetically. Saying, oh, Rush, thank you so much. I want to thank you for the opportunity. Of course, this is not exactly the way I wanted to come on. Mainly, I want to express to you and all your listeners my very sincere regret for those comments I made yesterday to Politico. I clearly ended up putting my foot in my mouth on some of those comments. I regret those stupid comments. Oh, man. It is so sad. Is it not so sad? Chris in Long Island, New York. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how you doing? Thanks for talking to me today. Hey, Tom, I heard an interview last night with a speechwriter, George Bush speechwriter, and they were talking about torture, and he was saying, we don't torture, we don't do that, and aggressive interrogation saved American lives. And my question to you is, have you or anybody else posed the other side of it to these advocates of that position, that is it now okay then for every other government to use torture, or however they want to define it, in the interest of saving their own citizens' lives? I mean, I think about, you know, when I was a kid seeing North American flyers, you know, having been tortured supposedly by North Vietnamese. I mean, we basically killed 1 million Vietnamese people. Were they justified in what they did because they were trying to save Vietnamese lives? And how would George Bush or Cheney or any of these other people answer that question? And is it okay for them to use these techniques as defined by them to save their citizens' lives? Because that's what sounds to me like the justification is for what they're doing.
Well, and in fact, setting aside the fact, and which is difficult to set aside, that torture doesn't actually produce good information, and that torture is really a tool of terrorism. It's not a tool of war or of policy, and certainly not a tool of intelligence.
Absolutely.
The thing that you laid out is one of the reasons why particularly many of our veterans organizations and a lot of veterans and people who are involved with the military are very, very concerned about our torture policies, because they're looking out for the interests of U.S. soldiers who may be captured on the battlefield, and they don't want them tortured. And by sanctioning torture, and people, of course, the right wing says, well, Al-Qaeda is not respected. But the reality is that we're either raising the bar worldwide or we're lowering it. Look at the last few hundred years of human history. We have been steadily raising it until the Bushies came along. Time to raise it again.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Fighting mind-numbing incompetence. Tom Hartman, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
AM 620 KPOJ conducts various contests weekdays and weekends at various times, offering various prizes to its listeners. By participating in a KPOJ contest, you're agreeing to be bound by the official contest rules for the contest. No purchase necessary. Participants and winners must be U.S. residents, at least 18 years old, and may only enter one time unless otherwise stated in the complete official contest rules. Only one prize per household for any contest within a 30-day period. For complete contest rules, visit the main office of this station during regular business hours.
What happened to those long summer days? Sunsets are coming earlier and nights are getting cooler. More lights are turned on and more thermostats turned up. This fall and winter, Oregonians will experience energy cost increases both at home and at the office. You can prepare now to use energy more wisely. At Energy Trust of Oregon, it's our mission to help you do just that. Energy Trust offers cash incentives as well as a wealth of information that will help you become more efficient with your energy use at home and at work. Log on to energytrust.org to find tips and solutions for lowering your energy costs. And these aren't just your average turn off some light suggestions. Energy Trust's cash incentives can help you when you install high efficiency furnaces, heat pumps, water heaters, and insulation. It's a great time to make changes right now before the temperatures go down and the lights come on. Visit energytrust.org to learn more.
Al museo está al lado del parque. Al museo está al lado del parque. Al museo está al lado del parque. El museo está.
When you realize you're actually speaking in another language, you won't be able to stop. Experience the joy for yourself with a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. Call 1-800-509-9122. Developed around the way you naturally think and learn, Rosetta Stone guarantees that this proven program is the fastest, easiest way to learn a new language, the same way you learned your first language. And now you can get a free demo as our gift to you. With no translation, no boring drills, and no useless memorization, there's no way you won't enjoy learning a new language.
El museo está al lado del parque.
Try Rosetta Stone for free by calling 1-800-509-9122. 1-800-509-9122. For your free demo, call 1-800-509-9122.
Just hang on a little longer. Your investments will come back.
Sound familiar? Or worse, your advisor hasn't even called. I'm Bill Meyer, president of Strategic Group, a Portland investment advisor firm. If you want an advisor that provides more than just a buy-and-hope approach to investing and have $500,000 of investable assets, for a free consultation, call now, 503-222-9737.
Real people, real results, Strategic Group.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Are the only questions anybody seems to ask? Well, who got beat, got fought, got bled, and who got burned today? Who got fixed, got fooled, got framed, and who got in the way? It's a money disease, it's a thing called greed. And it feeds your nose, you need the money most in Moneyland. Oh, and it's so funny if you...
It's a song from 1931, right? No, it's not. Okay. But anyhow, welcome back. 51 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And we have shared with you some of the really important stories in the news. 14-year-old boy is patrolling the city of Chicago for 5 hours in a patrol car. That toilet paper is hanging off Bernie Madoff's mansion. That a goat has been detained for an armed robbery. And that Silvio Berlusconi has put 3,000 troops on the streets instead of police officers. Says it won't work, however, because his women are so beautiful. Let's check out some real news here. Ellen Ratner, an actual reporter and accredited and the head of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Ellen, welcome to the show. What's going on in the world?
Well, I'm at the belly of the beast right now, except it's not a beast anymore. So the White House definitely has a decided different flavor to it.
Really?
There's
a different vibe in the air, as it were?
Well, I think so, but that's just, you know, me.
Mm-hmm.
I think the press is going after Gibbs in very similar ways that they go after everybody. I mean, one of the things that they, several things went out of the bill, including the family planning money, but I guess, and to resod the grass on the mall, that did go out of the bill, but for instance, smoking cessation didn't. The analogy that Robert Gibbs used today, is we're only in the third inning, and that there's going to be a vote tonight, and they expect more votes as this changes. The president is also going to be meeting tonight with members of Congress, both Republican and Democrat, and he is intending to sort of continue these meetings in a very bipartisan way. So he's doing something in a different kind of way. Some good news, and that is the Bureau of Labor Statistics today says that there has been this is going to be music to your ears. There has been a growth in unionization from 12.1% in 2007 to 12.4%, and the number of workers belonging to the unions rose by 428,000 people.
That's great. I'm curious. I'd be interested to see a breakout of that, because the private unionized workforce, that is non-governmental employees, is typically quoted around 8%. And the balance of that is government positions. And so, for example, when the TSA went into place, you know, that increased the number of union employees.
Private sector rose from 7.5% to 7.6. Public sector rose from 35.9% to 36.8%. So you got a little bit of the public got a little more, but the private got a little bigger too.
That's great news. That's great news. Thank you, Ellen. Thank you for that.
I knew you'd be happy about that. The Senate Judiciary Committee they cleared Holder 17-2. A not big surprise. Cornyn of Texas and Dr. Tom Coburn did not vote for him.
Right, Dr. No. I'm curious, Ellen. What
Dr. No, he's definitely Dr. No.
Yeah. I'm curious, if famous for putting holds on things, I'm curious what your personal take is on the rumors that are flying around Washington, D.C., that this private conversation that Eric Holder and Arlen Specter had yesterday, the day before.
Is that he's going to look forward and not backwards?
Well, that he might have caved on prosecuting Karl Rove specifically.
Yeah, I hate to be the cave artist, but I think he did. I would not be surprised. I really wouldn't. I think a lot of pressure would be put to bear, and I also think it is not President Obama's style to start going after him. I just think that's not who he is. Now, you and I may have some very different viewpoints about that, but
yeah.
I just...
Well, if Karl Rove committed crimes, I mean, if prosecuting Don Siegelman illegally was a crime and destroying a man's life was a crime, I think he should be held to account for it.
Hey, yesterday the Supreme Court unanimously, as I said to you on this show, said that some guy who spent 24 years in jail can't sue the supervising prosecutor.
Right.
I mean, you wonder where there's justice. And look, you and I are happy as clams that we have President Obama. But it doesn't mean that all justice all of a sudden is going to appear.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to have to keep the pressure on Eric Holder once he gets confirmed. And let's also remember the lessons of Scalia and Thomas and Roberts, who all, in their confirmation hearings, very clearly said that they were not going to be ideological candidates, and very clearly said that they were going to walk down the middle road, blah de blah. And then as soon as they got confirmed, they basically put their thumb to their nose and wiggled their fingers and said ha ha, and went on their merry way. And frankly, hopefully, Eric Holder will be able to do the same thing.
Hopefully we will see that. But I have a feeling that this administration is, for better or for worse, one that is going to keep its deals.
Yeah. Okay.
And again, we can be critical of that, and we can keep the pressure on. I mean, anybody who knows Governor Siegelman's story is like outraged.
Yeah. Yeah, we had
and it
on
hurts
show.
Because when you know somebody, it's not a statistic. It's not some governor that you have no idea of. It's
right.
A person.
Yeah, and you and I both know him, and his story is, well, he was on the show yesterday or the day before, talking about this and again, we need to be pushing this. We have just 20-30 seconds left, Ellen. Any big,
yeah, the
bullet
other thing is
wanna...
that the Republicans put the Senate Republicans put forth a new chip S-chip proposal, and it got rejected. 65-32, which means that it had some Republicans voting with the Democrats, quite a few, as a matter of fact.
Interesting. Very good. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, of course, the website. Thanks, Ellen, for the update.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. Coming up tomorrow, I'll have the distinct pleasure of speaking with former President Jimmy Carter about a new book he's written on the Middle East. It's called We Can Have Peace in the Holy Land, a plan that will work. Plus, I'll confront conservative columnist Tony Blankley about bringing back the draft, censoring the press, and other odd ideas from his new book, American Grit. And don't forget, my friends, activism begins with you. Democracy begins with you. It all starts when we get active. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.